Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 1043 The Fan.
And we are here. You don't have to think about it. It is right here. It is right now. How you doing today, James Merrillat?
I am doing great, Zach. How are you?
I'm doing all right, man. I'm doing good. I'm doing good. All right doesn't cut it. I'm doing good.
Good.
Happy to have you here in today. It is Stokely's birthday. And it is like quickly becoming a thing around here. Guys just take off on their birthday. Like, how is this happening? Mike Evans 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
D-Mac yesterday.
Yeah.
And today, no Stokely because it's his birthday.
Well, you know, normally I would jump at the chance to be critical of Stoke. I would. But I'm kind of a big birthday guy, like almost to a ridiculous point. You know, like I've got birthday month. It's the month of October.
Oh Lord.
Yeah, exactly. So at least I understand it. I recognize it.
So 1/12 of the calendar year, you're celebrating your birthday.
Correct.
My goodness.
You know, but I include other people in that. Like it's not just me celebrating.
Oh, how kind.
It's fun for the whole family. But here's the thing is, I'm obnoxious that way. I get it. But I'm also very good about other people's birthday. Like, I you know, I have a good ability to remember. I'm always wishing people happy birthday and up for the celebration. So it's like, you know, I think that makes my birthday fascination or whatever you want to call it a little more tolerable because at least I return it as well.
Sure. Well, it's all good. As I say oftentimes on this radio show, life is short. You want to celebrate? Celebrate. So go do it. He's golfing today. I'm happy for him. I'm very happy for him. And he'll have a nice dinner tonight, and he'll be back in the saddle tomorrow. James is going to be with us here throughout the afternoon. The first Ramos Law. No, I just said Stokely will be back tomorrow in the saddle. We're actually playing golf tomorrow. Tomorrow's the
Correct.
Match. Tomorrow's
Correct.
The match. As I was just reminded in my ear, and very much looking forward to that. Are you going to be out on location tomorrow?
I will be. I'm hosting with CJ from 9 to noon out at the course.
Oh, sweet. Yeah. Sweet. It'll be good to see CJ then. I always give him shots behind his back. I might as well do it to his face tomorrow. That'll be a blast. I'll get your prediction on who's going to win a little bit later in the show. But the first RamosLaw.com text that I see, 303-713-1043. Hey, James and Zach, thoughts on Vegas and what it says about the Avs? Interesting question. I don't know if it's a referendum on who the Avs are, but I think the question is in bounds.
Yeah, and when that game started to get away from Vegas last night, that was the thought that went through my head. And I was about to tweet it, and then I said, you know what, it's only 3-2. The series isn't over yet. And that is a tweet that may not age well. So, you know, I'm not counting Vegas out of this thing quite yet. The other part of it, Zach, is sometimes when you play that kind of series and, you know, Vegas, I know they won it in six and I know they won four straight, but that series wasn't easy for the Golden Knights. Sometimes it's a little bit like a team in basketball. You know, when they come back from 20 down, they get all the way back, they tie the game up, and then they blow it at the end because they expended all their energy just
right.
trying to get back into it.
Right.
There might be a little bit of that going on with Vegas, too, of, hey, we beat the team we had to beat, and we put it all out there to do it, and now they got, you know, less left in the tank or nothing left in the tank. But, you know, it does beg the question a little bit, and it does kind of take away some of the excuse because part of the excuses I heard for – you know, the roster Joe Sakic put together and for the job Jared Bednar did in the postseason was, well, yeah, but they lost to the second-best team. I mean, essentially, this was the Stanley Cup Finals. Well, if neither team even makes it to the Finals,
right?
I think it definitely brings those questions up, and I think they've always been fair to ask. I think they'll even be more fair to ask if the Golden Knights get bounced in the semifinals.
Yeah, it's and by the way, though, that thought at the time was fair. Hey, this is kind of the Stanley Cup before the Cup. Whoever wins this is going to have the fast track. Especially considering, look, the Canadians weren't all that in the regular season. They really weren't. They were in, you know, that pod up there in Canada, which wasn't highly thought of, and they didn't win a ton of games. Like, they were, I don't know, 3-4 games over 500? I mean, that's who they were, so it's hard to imagine they'd be doing what they're doing now, you know, 2.5 weeks ago.
Yeah, I don't think the regular season gave us a very good sense of what any team was, right? Because they played the same teams over and over and over again.
That was obnoxious.
Oh, it's Minnesota again. And, it was just the same thing over and over and over again. So, you know, if the matchups happen to be in your favor, I think it could inflate what you were. And if they weren't, it doesn't necessarily mean that, hey, once you get outside of that bubble and the matchups are different, that you can't shine a little bit. So I think that's part of it. And then hockey's just kind of quirky that way, right? We've seen 8 seeds win the cup before. You don't see that very often in other sports, certainly very, very rarely in a sport where they play a series. You'll see back in the day, a 6 seed win the Super Bowl every once in a while because it's, you know, it's 3 wins and they're there. It's a little bit of a different thing when you're playing 7 games. Usually the best team wins the series, but hockey, we've seen this before. So I think when you combine those things of, we didn't get a great sense of what every team was in the regular season, just kind of the nature of the beast, plus just the way the Stanley Cup playoffs can go, I guess we shouldn't be shocked by this, but man, all that we were told about how, you know, let's spin this loss and it really wasn't that bad. That is quickly deteriorating right in front of our eyes.
Well, we'll see how it shakes out. Still time left in the series, but the Canadiens there with a 3-2 series lead, and probably they were a serious dog at the start of the series, and there they are, one win away from going to the Stanley Cup final. So we'll obviously continue to follow that from afar. Here's one on the RumbleSlaw.com text line to start the show. This was like at 12:02. Next at the plate, Zach Bye. Boo! For the Arenado conversation that me and Stoke had yesterday. So a week from tomorrow, Stoke and I are going to go to our first Rockies game together. We were doing this annually for opening day for 3 consecutive years. Then it led to the 2020 season. And then this season, the way it worked with the with the media and with the limited crowd, it just didn't allow us as a team to go down there as we did for the first 3 years I was in town. So the last 2 seasons, we haven't been down there for opening day. So we're going to go next Thursday, so a week from tomorrow, and a great friend of ours, generous enough to get a suite and invited us, and we're going to be there for the return of Nolan Arenado. And I'm sure it is going to be a widely discussed topic as we get closer to that. We started to have it yesterday. But what do you think the reception will be a week from tomorrow at Coors Field when arguably the greatest player in the history of the organization returns after all the calamity on the way out?
I think it'll be overwhelmingly positive. I think he will get a standing ovation the first time he comes to the plate. I think the crowd will greet him like the, returning hero, which I'm fine with. You know, I don't normally, tell people how to cheer. You bought your ticket, you go do what you want. So by the same token, I'm not going to tell people not to boo. If I was there, I would boo. I think Nolan Arenado, took his big contract, took his ball and went home. Never had any intention to stay here and make it work here. I think it's a classic case of a guy getting his cake and then getting to eat it too. And I would boo him. I think he bailed on Colorado and he bailed on the Rockies every bit as much and even more so than Carmelo Anthony did. But that's not how people in this town see it. They hated Jeff Breidich. They don't like the Montforts. And once the narrative kind of gets established, right out of the gate of who's the good guy and who's the bad guy, that can't be changed. I mean, we've seen it even in the last week, Zach, with Carmelo and the announcement that he and Lala were getting divorced. It brought up the whole thing again that, he left and went to New York because of Lala, which was not the entire story, but that became the narrative, so that's all anybody went with. The narrative with Nolan was positive. I think he'll get a resounding standing ovation, but I would boo him, and I would boo him every time he came to the plate.
You know, it's very interesting because that is the exact mindset that I thought would prevail here. That, hey, 9 out of every 10 people, it's easy to blame management. And when the guy that you're blaming has a divorce with the very organization, as that season, you know, was 20 games in, which yeah. was just so bizarre unto its own right. I mean, this whole thing could be a 30 for 30, legitimately.
Oh, yeah.
It is the twists and turns of this relationship over the years. But then you have Breidich, who's the poster child in this Nolan Arenado saga, have his own divorce. So it's like that face that was so easy to hate, he's not even here. So both guys are gone within a span of, I don't know, 4 months or something like that. The whole thing is just over the top bizarre. But my thought was, Nolan comes back. It's easy to hate the management. It's more the dynamic of fans that lends itself more to cheer for the player because that's who, you know, fans' names have, you know, been on their back. Or, you know, I even met a listener out about 2 years ago at an old Chicago. I was doing trivia. And he said, man, we were there on Father's Day when Nolan hit that walk-off grand slam for the cycle. And, you know, my wife was pregnant and we named our son Nolan, you know, and those are real like life experiences that are interwoven with people who are fans. And I said, man, 8 out of every 10 people are going to applaud Nolan. But yet when we talk about this and we open it up to the RamosLaw.com text line, I saw way more, and I'm not going to say overwhelmingly or even the majority, but way more people sounding like you and Stokely saying, wait a second, this guy kicked and screamed his way out of town.
Yeah.
He was, and up until the point where we found out about the videos, I was kind of not making the case for Nolan, but I was trying to be more reasonable. Like, hey, it doesn't get this bad without both sides at play here, and I still believe that you know there was a lot of stubbornness on both sides and maybe some dishonesty and on both sides. But when I found out about the videos that he was sending, the videos of his swing, even before the 2020 season started, that for me was a seismic shift in just the way that I viewed the entire thing.
Yeah, I'm with you. And I think fans that, you know, have kind of stuck with the story as it's evolved and didn't just take the, you know, kind of the initial line that came out and didn't just make a knee-jerk reaction, I think they've seen more and more details that come out that kind of make Nolan not necessarily the bad guy, but you're right. He's not, you know, innocent in this whole thing. I think they may have that opinion and may boo. I do think the people who bother to take the time to text in or tweet and do those kind of things to say, yeah, I'm going to boo him. You know, I think those are going to outnumber people that are going to take the time to say, yeah, I'm going to go down there and cheer him. It's kind of like, you know, complaints at a restaurant, right? No, most people don't leave and say it was great. You only hear
right, from the people who had a bad experience. Right.
I think it's kind of one of those things.
Okay, I can see that.
And I think what you talked about is going to hit the nail on the head. I think most of the people who go to Coors Field, and I don't mean this as a criticism, I just think it's the reality, are fairly casual baseball fans and fairly casual Rockies fans. And how many of them have stuck with the story for 3 months and continued to get all the details and, you know, have found out that Nolan was doing what he did and kind of pieced it all together and looked back and said, man, that was only 2 months after he signed his $260 million deal. Like, I just don't think most of them do that. I think most of them are going to look at it and say, you know, I didn't buy a Jeff Breidich jersey.
Yeah.
I bought a Nolan Arenado jersey.
Yeah.
And I didn't have this great emotion when Breidich pulled off a big trade, but I sure had some great emotion on Father's Day. And I wasn't in the ballpark, but I remember where I was watching that game with my kids.
Same,
right? So
same.
you know, it's...
I picked up the phone, and I wouldn't stop calling Stokely.
It was crazy.
He was out on the golf course. I must have called him seven times in a row trying to connect. I was so over-the-top hyped.
It was amazing. And so, naturally, if you know, emotion, right, then that's a positive emotion, is going to make you go down, and that's what you remember. And the other part of it is, you know, Jeff Brightus was just such a – nobody likes management anyway, right? Like, it doesn't matter what industry you work in.
Right.
Nobody likes management. Nobody likes the principal's office. Nobody does. I get it.
But he was extra hateable.
Exactly. He was just so arrogant.
Yeah.
And the whole, you know, brain surgeon thing and, you know, one of those guys that would quickly tell you he went to Harvard in case you forgot from the previous 12 times he told you. He just wasn't a likable guy. So, man, he was super easy to paint as the villain. And on the other side, Nolan did nothing but entertain the fans while he was here.
Sure, I mean,
he was a great, great player. He is the best player in the history of the franchise.
I agree.
I think that that's hard to debate. But to me, that's what makes it even more bitter, right? Like, man, you were such a great player and so much fun to watch. And we all, you know, invested, whether it was our time, our money, our emotions in getting behind that team and getting behind him and, you know, being a fan. And then he just bails because St. Louis is a better baseball town and they got a better chance to win and I can make my money there. Yeah, I feel like that's the shot at me as a Rockies fan. So I'm going to boo him. I'm going to let him know. And you know what? Not going to make a Hills Beans worth a difference. He's still going to make $30 million this year, but I'll feel a little better. I'll boo him.
Well, you know, you and Stokely are of that same mind. I would not boo Nolan. I think two things can be true at the same time. I can think that the way that he went about his exit was underhanded, but also have a serious appreciation for what that guy did year after year after year after year. And I don't want to let the very recent sting of a nasty divorce make me misremember an otherwise happy marriage. So
yeah, I get that.
And again, reasonable minds can disagree on this one because, as I said to Stokely yesterday, if you want to boo Nolan because of how he left, I think it's in bounds. I do. It's just not for me. Like, I'm choosing to appreciate the larger sample size. You know, will I be on my feet and giving them, you know, a standing ovation? I don't know. I don't know how I'm going to feel on that exact night a week from tomorrow. But I know that I won't be booing.
Yeah, I get it. There's certain people that, you know, they have good relations with their exes. And then there are certain people, every time they cross paths, it's like, oh, God, what's going to go down here?
Yep.
You know, I'm guessing I fall into the second category.
Sure.
I get it, and I don't think either side is wrong here, right? Because I can totally understand why people would want to go down there and kind of have a final opportunity. Not that it's the last time he'll be here, but you couldn't go to a game last year, right? So you didn't really have an opportunity to say thank you, so to speak. So I can get why people would want to go down there. And, you know, so maybe you cheer him and give him the standing ovation the first time he comes to the plate. And then from then on, he's an opponent. And you treat him just like any other third baseman on the visiting team, which here in Colorado, typically that's you're treating him better than the home team because there's more fans in the stands for the other team. But, you know, I can see why people would go that route and go the thank you route. I just tend to think he's getting a free pass a little bit from people in terms of how he handled it. And I didn't like it.
Some people are, James. There's a lot that are not.
That's great.
I mean,
that's good.
There are a lot that are not. And I'll read some of these responses here in a second on the RamosLaw.com text line. But I want to read this one first because I think context is king. And it's very, very important in this specific conversation. Someone says, and put your name on, I'll give you a shout out. He said, don't act like the Rockies are anything to be proud of. I would have left too. That's fine if you feel like that. But then don't resign.
Right.
So like you're saying, I would have left too. He didn't have to stay in the first place. He could have not signed that massive extension and hit free agency. Like that was his right. He had a, you know, 900 game sample size of what it was like playing here in Colorado. And then he resigned. And that's when, he started to send out the videos and had this massive falling out, with management. So the timeline here is important.
Yeah, no doubt. And, you know, he had to know, everybody who's been around this organization knows that, hey, if they sign free agents and they don't work out, they can't spend their way out of the mistakes. They have to wait for those contracts to come off the books. So when they spent money to put together the most expensive bullpen in the history of baseball, which, you know, on one hand, you could say, hey, at least they're trying. That's a pretty big commitment. Now, it would have been nice if they'd signed three good pitchers. Instead, they signed three guys that were, you know, gas can A, B, and C. But that shouldn't have shocked Nolan. The Rockies didn't change their MO. They didn't change the way they go about their business after signing him. If they had, that would have been something I could say, yeah, okay, I can see why you got upset. You kind of got duped. But they didn't. They operated the exact same way they've operated for 20 years. Since the Hampton and Nagel deals didn't work out, this organization went from being somebody who was out there playing with the big boys because they were drawing, you know, 3.5 million fans a year to operating like a small to mid-market team. He knew that as well as anybody else. And that's what rubbed me the wrong way of it. If he acts like, well, 10 months later, they're not out, you know, signing guys like the Yankees and the Red Sox and the Cubs and the Dodgers. Well, of course they're not. We all knew they weren't going to be that way, especially when they gave Nolan such a big chunk of money. So, yeah, I get it. The Rockies they've never won a division title. They're kind of hard to defend, but you knew what you signed up for. You knew who you walked down the aisle with. To bail on him less than a year in is, I don't think you get a pass for that.
I'll read you some of the responses coming in on the text line, 303-713-1043. Arenado is selfish and ungrateful. I would boo him until I puke. Whoa, that's from Ken. RJ says, why wasn't what Nolan did considered tampering? I don't know the answer to that question, but that's a good question.
I don't know. Can players tamper? Right? Like the front office couldn't do that. And
right.
The owner couldn't do that.
Right.
But can players send stuff to other players with the thought of, hey, make sure your GM sees this? I mean,
I don't know. It seems risky, even if it's legal.
It's a bad look, for sure.
Yeah, that's for sure. Someone else says, I've been a Rockies fan my whole life. We have let down every single player. We did nothing to make us better. It's a joke. I'll say this about that. There is a difference between trying and failing and not trying.
Correct.
The Rockies tried.
Correct.
The Rockies were actually spending like the most money. They had like the highest payroll maybe in their organizational history.
They did. It was the 11th highest payroll in baseball.
11th highest in the sport. And they were drafting the right players. You know, like they drafted Charlie Blackmon. They drafted Trevor Story. They, you know, traded for Herman Marquez. But then there was a great deal of other massive swings and misses where they spent $100 million on a bullpen in like one offseason, I'm pretty sure it was.
Yep.
And it just didn't work. Like they paid Ian Desmond, what was it, like 5 years, $70 million. It just didn't work. So it wasn't for lack of trying. They just did not have the right guy in charge. That's Jeff Bright. That was supposed to be the baseball guy. He got some things right, most things wrong, and you know those decisions caught up with the Rockies. It seemed like overnight.
Yeah, I mean, he made seven mistakes in a row, right? Like when you're a mid-market team, you really can't afford any, but that's unrealistic. You just can't afford seven in a row. And when it's Jake McGee, Brian Shaw, Wade Davis, that bullpen 0-3, Ian Desmond, Daniel Murphy 0-5. Which is very appropriate for those two. And then you also whiff and don't re-sign DJ LeMahieu. He didn't get more money from the Yankees than they could have offered him
here.
It was
2 for 20 from the Yankees.
Yeah. It wasn't a crazy deal. We're like, well, they're never going to match that. And
right.
Then he missed on Adam Ottavino, who was a very consistent, guy out of the bullpen here, which is very, very difficult to find. To me, if you let a successful pitcher walk out of here for something other than crazy money, then you ought to be fired for that because it's so hard to find a pitcher who can be successful here consistently. And you probably need to overpay a little bit, the opposite of a hometown discount. But to let him walk for what he walked for, and then, you know, you get the spin of, oh, you always wanted to play in New York. Well, sure. Okay. Or do you want to get more money to stay where you're at and not have to move? Like, that doesn't seem like a hard sales pitch. But those seven decisions, That's why this team fell apart. But that's why they went from back-to-back postseasons for the first time in franchise history.
Ever. Yep.
To Pedro Gomez, the late, great Pedro Gomez, picking them to go to the World Series to a year later, they're a dumpster fire and they're trading their best player. It was an amazing turn of events because they were, I don't know that they were at their peak, but man, when they were playing the play-in, against the Dodgers and the series.
And then going to beat the Cubs.
In Chicago.
They were sending four positional players to the All-Star game for the first time in the history of this franchise. I mean, things were good. And then overnight, this precipitous fall into, you know, what is tracking to be, they had the graphic up on the screen last night, the worst home winning percentage and road winning percentage, the largest differential in the history of pro baseball. That's what it is right now. So we'll get back into it in a little bit. Ryan Spielborgs is going to join us at 12:45. So we will tap back in to this conversation. Real quick, the fan store is at it again. Check out the new Complicated Fella limited edition t-shirt in both Denver and Green Bay colors, available now at denverfan.com/store. Really quick shout out so I don't forget it. My nephew, Jonathan, who I met when he was 4 years old, last week graduated high school and today swore into the U.S. Air Force as an airman, and I just wanted to give him a shout-out. So proud of that young man.
That's very cool. Really, really cool. Good for him.
Yes,
for him.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. We are very proud of him. James Merrillat is filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Happy birthday to Stoke. He's out there on the links. He deserves it. Shifting gears here just a little bit. Just how great was George Payton's offseason? It seems like we have some debate here at the station, and it starts with a piece from Mike Evans on DenverFan.com. We'll react to it coming up next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
James Merrillat is filling in for Brandon Stokely today. Really good conversation about the Rockies and the Nolan Arenado dynamic. There's a lot of layers to that one and some really thoughtful responses on the RamosLaw.com text line. All right. Just how great was George Payton's offseason? We have some debate about that here on the station. Mike Evans has a piece up at DenverFan.com that I really encourage people to go and read. I thought it was a thoughtful piece, well done. Although I disagree with components of it, Mike did a good job, and it's worth your time. The Drop the Mic weekly article from half of our morning show. James, what did you make of the contents of Mike's piece?
The contents, I thought, were way off base. I mean, it's a good piece, and I think everybody should go read it so they can, you know, disagree with it like I do. I just thought it was basically saying that George Payton inherited this mess, which is just not true. The roster was pretty darn good, and he's done a good job of coming in and, you know, just kind of keeping things calm and not making waves. And I don't like the mentality of you've got a 6-year contract, so year one you can audit the class and just sit back and let things go. I think, has George Payton done a fine job? Sure. Yeah, I don't think he's done anything outlandish. I don't think he's been perfect, but I don't think he's done anything outlandish. But if you call what he's done this offseason so far great or a home run or any of these superlatives that we've heard, then what do you call it if they get Aaron Rodgers? Like, where do you go from there? Is it a grand slam home run? Is it a triple home run? Like, it can't be great if there's something that big that could still be done, right? Like, I think we just throw around those terms way too loosely. I think he's done fine, and that's not a knock. That's not a negative. I think he's got a solid C+, B-, and that's okay out of the gate, but he's not an A+ or even an A in my book. I just think that's silly. I think that's a field day mentality.
That's a field day mentality.
Yeah, everybody gets a ribbon. Good job, George. Here's your ribbon. You finished seventh in the race. Here's your ribbon.
Oh, James. Okay. I agree with definitely some of what you're saying here. One of my biggest takeaways for this conversation is I just think it is a foolhardy exercise to try to now, and by the way, this is what we do. This is what, like, I'm not being dismissive of the notion of grading a draft or an offseason. This is literally what we do. So Mike is and whoever else wants to give George Payton a grade for what he's done, fine. We can have fun with that, have those conversations. But we just don't know. Like the, for it to be called a home run or a single, like, we don't know. The ball is still just coming off the bat. So, like, and I think of my own optimism from a year ago. Now, I wasn't over the top optimistic like you are, had the Broncos at 10-6. Won't let you forget that, but.
Over the top. But, 10-6 when you made the playoffs.
So I had the Broncos as a losing team again a year ago. I had them at 7-9, but I thought there would be improvement because they, you know, shored up the offensive line, signing Graham Glasgow, drafting Lloyd Cushenberry, you know, out of the best offensive line group in the nation there at LSU, following, you know, arguably or inarguably the greatest college football team of all time, you know, trading for Jarrell Casey, 5-time Pro Bowler. Oh, what can Vic Fangio do with him? Drafting of Jerry Jeudy and, you know, just you're bringing in. Trading for AJ Boye. He was just an all pro, first team all pro in 2017, you know, and looking at these moves on paper and saying, man, this might have been Elway's best offseason. And then they go out there and, you know, this guy gets hurt, this guy under delivers, and, you know, you end up losing more than twice as many games as you win. So I'm cautioning myself just the same way as anybody else of, yes, on paper, it looks good. Kyle Fuller, Ronald Darby, sure. But you could also look at those in different ways, too. Like, you could also say Ronald Darby is coming off, you know, the only season he's ever been healthy, ever, for all 16 games. Kyle Fuller, there's a reason he's available. He's coming off his most down season as a pro. And if these signings don't work out, we'll look back to those things that I'm saying right now, that the health histories or the signs that, you know, his career might be, Kyle Fuller's career might be going in the wrong direction at this very fickle age playing that position. So we don't know. These guys could come in and be all pros. So in terms of, like, projecting what it's going to be, yes, we're going to have fun with that, but we just don't know.
We don't know. And, you know, again, I think he's done fine. But this notion that he's made all these huge moves, I mean, you outlined the two big moves, right? And it's Fuller, which I think is a good move. But, boy, that kind of screams a lot of A.J. Boye, right? A.J. Boye hadn't had a good season since 2017. 3 years later, he was in a Broncos uniform. Fuller hasn't really had a good season or a great season since 2018, I think it was. 3 years later, he's in a Broncos uniform. So, okay, I think you got to take some risks and you got to roll the dice a bit, and I don't have a problem with that one, but it's far from a slam dunk. Yeah, Ronald Darby's a guy I don't believe had a single interception last year.
He did not.
The only stat that matters,
no,
but
yeah.
you could look at it. I like their defensive line, but right now, if you're being honest, today versus June 23rd of 2020, do we think more highly of this defensive line now than a year ago? Because last year it was the same group plus Jarrell Casey, and I think we were all high on that.
So, yes, I know I certainly was.
You know, Shelby Harris, he was here last year.
Mm-hmm.
Draymond Jones, he was here last year. Mike Purcell, he was here last year. It's the same guys, minus the 5-time Pro Bowler or whatever it was. So somehow that's getting spun into an upgrade, but okay. It's the same middle linebackers that they've been trying to upgrade for multiple years. Still those two. Still Alexander Johnson and Josie Jewell last time I checked. And then you got bookend pass rushers that are both injury prone. Like, I'm not trying to be a wet blanket, but I just don't know what magic wand George Payton came in here and just started waving all over the place. He traded for Teddy Bridgewater. Whoop-de-doo. Like, I just don't get it. And again, I'm not saying he's done a bad job, because I get this on Twitter all the time of, oh, you want to fire George Payton. I've never said anything remotely close to that. I'm just not saying I think he's so far the executive of the year in the NFL. Now, if you go get Aaron Rodgers, sure, you're on that list. But, you know, to some extent, it all doesn't matter if you don't solve the quarterback problem. And he didn't solve the quarterback problem. So,
and James, that's what this all is going to come back to.
For sure.
That's what it's all going to come back to. If Mac Jones or Justin Fields turns out to be a franchise quarterback and they fell to you, we weren't sure if either guy was going to fall. We weren't sure if San Francisco was going to draft Justin Fields. We really weren't.
Yep.
2 days before the draft, he was the favorite to get selected. There was momentum for Mac Jones. There was thought it was going to be Mac Jones. We didn't know who was going to fall, but both of those guys did. and he didn't draft them. And ultimately, this offseason, I don't think it'll be legitimately remembered for bringing in Ronald Darby or Kyle Fuller. It'll be remembered for what happens at the quarterback position, both here and in Chicago and New England.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And if both those guys turn out to be busts, well, I don't think George Payton will get any awards for passing on them, although he should. He did a good job of not selecting them.
Sure.
But it'll still come down to, well, fine, you still got to, take a swing at someone. You still have to solve it. Now, that could be Drew Locke. Maybe. Maybe they think he's going to blossom. But if they really believe that, they wouldn't have brought in Teddy Bridgewater. They wouldn't have tried to trade for Matthew Stafford. They wouldn't be in conversations for Aaron Rodgers. They wouldn't have been in conversations for Deshaun Watson. Like, it could happen. But if it does, to suggest that George Payton saw it coming would be revisionist history. I think he, probably sees what we all see. Hey, there's some moments that are really good with Drew Locke. And then there's some moments where it looks like he should be standing on the sideline holding a clipboard. I think that's a fair way to look at it. So, yeah, it's all going to come down to his success during his 6 years. So starting in year one and then all the way through his first contract and hopefully beyond, will all come down to whether or not he can solve the quarterback riddle. Because if he can't, any success they have will be short-term success. If they have a surprisingly good year this year with Teddy or with Drew, but neither one of those guys shines at quarterback, they're just kind of a placeholder, it's not a long-term recipe for success. It's an aberration. So, yeah, it's all going to come down to whether or not he can solve that. And he had two guys that potentially could have solved it, and he decided to pass on both of them. So we'll see if that was the right decision or not.
We will circle back to this conversation because I brought up an idea yesterday near the end of our show about these quarterbacks and expectations for 2021 that I want to get your thoughts on. But first, Michelob Ultra presents the Fans Match Challenge powered by CoBank Colorado Open, benefiting the First Tee Green Valley Ranch. Guys, we're raising funds for the First Tee, helping underprivileged youth in our community to learn life skills through golf. The show that raises the most funds by tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. is going to get two mulligans. Please make it Stokely and Zach. Even if you have an extra $5, $10 in your pocket, it'll go a long way with the First Tee Green Valley Ranch. It's going to an awesome, awesome, a purpose. Your money is purposeful here. It will go a long way, and you can donate now at denverfan.com/match, and this here show is sponsored by GC Lounge. And as the standings of this morning, Stokely and Zach were the leaders in the clubhouse. Should be our drive shows, but we're number one right now, and that is an indicator that we are the people's show. So if you got an extra $5, throw it to Stokely and Zach. It's going to a great cause. All right, the Rockies narrowly lost in Seattle last night and have now lost three games in a row. But there's a bit more here than meets the eye. We'll take a dive into that conversation coming up next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
So the Rockies lost their first game in Seattle last night. And, on paper, look, the Rockies are 14 games under 500. I'm not going to come in here and spin you how they're a terrific baseball team. But I will say this. I have been watching the Rockies play every single night. They had that nice five-game win streak. They've lost three in a row, but they lose the final the last two games of the Brewers 6-5, 7-6, and then last night 2-1. Three consecutive losses by a total of three runs. And if you just covered up the final score, my eyes are telling me, despite their overall record, that this team is actually playing pretty good baseball. And Ryan Spielborgs joins us, our Rockies analyst, courtesy of Bet River Sportsbook. I know how I sound right now, Ryan, a bit of like an apologist. I'm sure I'll be called on the text line. But I'm watching this team every night, and they do not seem as bad of a club right now anyway, the last week and a half, as their record would indicate.
Yeah, I think it's okay to be called an apologist in certain times. I mean, I'm certainly curious what the text line is going to say. What do they want you to say? Just crush them? Like, it's a dumpster fire? You know, they have been playing good baseball. They swept the Padres with the full squad. They went toe to toe with the Brewers. They also probably could have won those two games against the Brewers on Saturday and Sunday. It's little things that always mount for this Rockies team, because you do have players, you know, that are still establishing themselves, and the little things do mount if you're not doing it. And there's a reason why they're 30-44. To your point, you know, it's on paper they're a team that has a lot of holes. And so when you have to go, you know, toe to toe against a team where you're playing, you know, a tight game, walks or missing a cutoff man or not taking an extra base, all those little itty bitty things, they cost you a game. So, you know, the Rockies have, though, over the last week, and even if they go back to the last 2 weeks, they've been doing the little things more consistently. It doesn't mean that they're not. Because last night I got frustrated with a play in the outfield, because that's an outfield ball that Tapia should have caught down the left field line. And it ended up, you know, leading to a run scored, and that ended up being the game. It's those little things that serve as great teaching moments if this team wants to get to where they want to go in the next couple of years.
Spilly, there are some young players that have started to kind of blossom a little bit, right? That was maybe something heading into the season that we thought, well, maybe that's one of the silver linings to kind of the way things went with Nolan and sort of this rebuild/restart, is it gives some young guys an opportunity. It was a matter of, well, who would step up. If you had to buy stock in one of these young players, whether it's Tapia or McMahon or Rogers or Daza, which one do you think it has the potential to be the Amazon stock of that group?
Well, it's a good question, because it's hard to differentiate, because Tapia and McMahon are both coming up with, you know, years of control and arbitration, and so, you know, like, you don't have them for as many years as you think. So it's tough to buy a stock where, you know, if I was to buy a stock out of all those guys, I'd buy McMahon, but you only have them for a short period of time. Brendan Rodgers, I think, is the one that, as a, you know, as a fan, you're like, okay, he's a third overall pick. He was drafted behind Dansby Swanson and Alex Bregman. You know what those guys have turned into. You know, can he turn into something in between? And the answer is, I don't know. I haven't seen enough. I've seen signs, but not enough to go like, okay, that's exactly what he is. And the same with Jonathan Daza. Daza's been basically a triple-A player that had nothing left to prove, and now he's getting an opportunity, and he's running with it. But does the league adjust to him? Does he, you know, is this just a hot stretch? And same thing with Tapia. Tapia we've seen now for 4 years, and this is the best we've ever seen him, because he's taken a walk. So it's like, it's really strange, because when you think about it, when you put that all on paper, it's not a very, you know, like, it's not a very shining story, because, again, like, McMahon would be the one I tell you to buy stock in, but you only have control of him for 3 more years, and that's not a lot of time in terms of baseball. You would end up, if you're a day trader and you want a long-term asset, Brendan Rodgers would be your guy, because he has the highest upside and the most control.
Spilly, baseball sometimes has a tendency of getting in its own way, and I think that is happening right now. The spectacle that was last night, just across the sport, with the sticky stuff and stealing all the headlines, I understand maybe their heart is in the right place. Doing it in the middle of the season seems absolutely absurd to me, considering just how fundamental of a thing that they're trying to change, while the train is already moving. what have you made of the last 24 hours with baseball and the enforcement of the tackiness of, you know, the way that pitchers want to grip that ball?
Oh, man. I mean, like, this one's complicated, because I've been very vocal about the missteps for Major League Baseball. And it's not, I'm not just blaming baseball. Like, I'm not blaming the commissioner's office. I think the Players Association has just as much blame to go in on this as anybody, because let me explain. Baseball had a problem before we even started the season, where you have 1,458 innings that teams and organizations were going to have to figure out and navigate. Last year was 540 innings pitched. We're already well past that. So what could have happened? I think a universal DH could have happened, and I also think larger roster size could have happened. And it should have happened because you needed more players for the season. And we've already seen the byproduct of last year's pandemic short season versus this year. There's more injuries in the history of the game than we've seen in the first 70 games. So it was a giant misstep from both sides because they wanted expanded playoffs, and there was this worry for the collective bargaining agreement, which starts next year, that they didn't want to give hand, that they didn't want to negotiate, and that there was just no wiggle room or gray area for them to come to a mutual agreement. And as a result, we're in this spot where now, as offenses have gone down and injuries have gone up, we're looking for things to fix where there could have been a mutual fix before the season started. Also note that Major League Baseball changed the baseball again. So it's 1% lighter, which makes it spin a little bit better. And when you simply take away tackiness from the league, I think it was misguided because what was your, where was the backup plan? Was there something like some substance that guys could use as tack that was universally accepted? And the answer was no. The entire thing is kind of, it's trite. I think it was necessary too at the same time because some of this stuff was increasing performance. But I think the players yesterday, some guys went a little bit over the line. To me, it's just follow the protocol. It's like wearing a mask. It's like, you know, you just do the stuff for the time being until we get everything kind of going back in order, and then we'll make adjustments from there. But right now, you know, I've been really disappointed both by the league and by the players and the reaction. And I think that a lot of this could have been handled in a better way if the union and the owners were aligned to try to fix something after what happened last year.
Yeah. All right. Great stuff. That's where we'll leave it now. Appreciate you jumping on with us. Our Rockies analyst, Ryan Spielborgs, courtesy of Bet River Sportsbook. Appreciate your time, and we'll check in with you again next week, Ryan.
All right, guys. Thanks for having me on.
All right. There he goes, Spilly. Rockies play a little bit early today. I think it's at like 2 o'clock in the afternoon here, in game two against Seattle. Got the Euro on here on the big screen in our American Financing Studios. Cristiano Ronaldo and Portugal about to go head to head with France in a really awesome matchup if you're into that kind of thing. All right. James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely today. The Athletic went through all 32 NFL teams and listed one MVP for each squad. Who was the selection for the Denver Broncos? We'll tell you and react to it coming up next.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.